for Lialogos Radio, the weekly radio program featuring the best in Greek music and culture, plus interviews with Greek and international newsmakers. Lialogos Radio with Michael Nevradakis begins now. That was Haris Alexiou starting us off today with Zia Mou here on Lialogos Radio, the global Greek radio program which airs each week on 20 radio stations across 5 countries, 4 continents, and online. My name is Michael Nevradakis, and today on the Lialogos interview series, we will be speaking with Turkish journalist, blogger, academic, and activist Gürkan Özturan, who will speak to us about a number of issues which are of concern to the wider Eastern Mediterranean and Middle East region, including Greece. Özturan, who is a marked man in Turkey for his role in the 2013 Gezi Park protests, will speak to us about the recent bombings which have taken place in Turkey, the Turkish government's crackdown on free speech, its escalating conflict against the Kurds, the conflict in Syria, and the refugee crisis which has followed. This is an interview of great interest to the wider Greek community and anyone who is interested in what is happening in the region, and it is coming up next here on the Lialogos Radio, followed by our commentary of the week and some great Greek music. The Lialogos Interview Series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community, coming up next here on Lialogos Radio. Joining us today on Diálogos Radio in the Diálogos interview series is Gürkan Özturan, a journalist, blogger, and activist from Turkey, who will speak to us about what has been happening recently in the country, which of course is directly relevant to Greece as well, being right next door to Turkey. So Gürkan, I know this has been a difficult time for you. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
We have a lot to talk about, of course, but let's begin with the recent deadly bombing incident at a peace rally in Ankara, the capital of Turkey. What was the nature of the rally that was being held, and what was the reaction of the authorities to the bombing? And as a last part to the question, who or what do you believe was actually behind this bombing incident?
This bombing reminds me of many other bombings that have taken place before election periods in Turkey in the past few decades or even the past century. There has always been a sort of political violence up to a level, never at this level, I guess. I cannot personally remember any incidents that have been so deadly, so devastating, so tragic before. But I remember 5 years ago, while I was about to take a bus, the bus had exploded right in front of me. And back then, that was pre-election period again. And if we remember, just 4 or 5 months ago in Diyarbakir, there had been another explosion at an HDP rally. So the left parties in Turkey have been seen, have been perceived as a threat to the state. And for some reason, they always get subjected to violence and violent attacks. On the one hand, I want to become a more realist person and say that I'm not very surprised that this attack took place, because I personally expect anything from this government, that they would hang on to power with all they have. They would not shy away from any kind of tactics or methods that includes hurting people too. So on the one hand, I was expecting. On the other hand, I was being so naive as to hoping that they would never do such a thing. But I believe that the government somehow is linked to this. We have seen the reactions of the ministers and the state officials in the aftermath of the attacks. The first reaction was to blame the HDP. They declared that the HDP were self-immolating, that they were self-bombing, which does not sound very realistic, of course, given that the explosion took place at the heart of the country, at the heart of the state. All the major state offices are just in a few kilometers distance to the explosion site, and it is a major square in the capital city. So even the bees that are flying in the city do not have a private life. They get surveilled on at all times. How can the opposition just carry bombs and kill over 100 people, start a self-harm? Of course, another significant aspect in this attack is that the reaction of the police in the aftermath of the attacks, in both cases actually, or even in 3 cases, both in Diyarbakir and Suruç, and just this past week in Ankara, the police, in the aftermath of the attacks, actually start shooting rubber bullets and using water cannon against the survivors. So this gives you a bit of an idea who might be behind the attacks, actually. And this does not look very hopeful, of course. Unfortunately, people are getting killed, and I consider this as part of political violence, obviously. And I guess all the fingers are pointing towards the government.
Now, after the Ankara bombings, Selahattin Demirtas, the leader of the major left-wing party in the Turkish parliament, gave a very powerful speech, and he also pointed fingers at the governmental authorities for the bombings and the attacks that took place. What did he say in his speech, and how did the speech resonate with the public?
Well, he just spoke sincerely for 10 minutes. He just spoke his heart, and in those 10 minutes, he just gave his impression of what has happened, that the party and the Turkish youth have been targeted, and he was saying that this is not the first time that it's happening, but every time they are being shown as those responsible behind the attacks. Even though the government is obviously controlling everything, they are trying to shy away from responsibility, and he was stating that if he was in charge, if he was a part of the government and such a thing had happened, he would resign immediately and do the responsible thing. But obviously, in the Turkish political culture, there is no resignation culture, unfortunately. So the government ministers, when they are evaluating the situation, they have been claiming that there is no security problem and that the state has full control of the situation. And Demirtas has been asking, if the state has full control of the situation, how come there are two bombs exploding in the same square? And if the state is unable to control the situation, why are you still not resigning? He was asking this, and of course, these questions echo among the society. But when it comes to the media, there is a bit of a problem with the media because majority of the media is under government control, and his words are actually getting subverted when being brought to agenda. And still, the pro-government media is using his earlier images, more joyful-looking images, to represent his outlook on what has happened. And they distort his messages. So spread of propaganda is going on regarding the incidents. But Demirtas's words obviously will cause something. Before the previous national elections, the repetition of which we are having right now, there was an explosion at another HDP rally in Diyarbakir. Back then, again, it was declared that the Islamic State, the ISIS, had been blamed for the attack. But there was a very significant moment. When the attack took place and when there was an explosion, the policemen, they started laughing and attacking with rubber bullets and water cannons to the civilians. And this was a very significant thing. And then the peace rallies, the anti-war rallies have been arranged. Also in relation to the Syrian situation, the people who did not want a war with Syria, the people who did not want bombs to explode in the public squares in Turkey, they came out to streets and they shouted with bomb voice. They have set a very simple agenda that they wanted peace, whatever the costs might be. And then there happened another explosion. If you remember the Kobane resistance, the activists from all around Turkey, they were set to go to Kobane and bring toys to the children. Unfortunately, their meeting in Suruç was subjected to another suicide bombing, and at least 35 of our friends have died. Again, right after the explosion, the police was standing right across the street from them and laughing at the suffering. And after that, the political violence has actually been escalating in the sense that the state has been putting more and more pressure, seeing the HDP and the opposition crowds as a valid threat to the government's sustainability. And this has led to even more violence and the pumping of the far-right ideology almost, that at some point has turned into a political mob on the streets. And if you remember the 6th and 7th September anniversary, on the exact same day, there has happened another form of violent mobs across the country in Turkey, and dozens of people have been killed. And in hundreds of locations, the far-right groups had been bussed in, and they were marching on the streets, putting up flags and attacking people. This has been escalating when there were more people at the peace rallies. So the more people joined the peace rallies, the more people would be brought towards the mobs that are becoming violent on the streets. And unfortunately, as I was saying earlier, I was hoping that this would never happen. But on the other hand, I was almost expecting that the government would indulge in such a thing. No matter how much they are trying to put the blame on some other groups right now, it's obvious that there is a security problem in Turkey, or there is a problem of approach to human rights by the government of Turkey.
We are on the air with Turkish journalist, academic, and activist Gürkan Özturan here on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. And Gürkan, a few moments ago you mentioned the media, and following the attacks, the government in Turkey enforced what seems to be one of its tried and true responses to an internal crisis, a blackout on coverage of the bombings in the media and also online through the social media. What is the Erdogan government's typical stance toward the media and, in particular, the social media?
Well, the social media as a whole has been seen as a menace to society, as our dear President Erdogan has put it years ago. He has always been targeting social media because it is uncontrollable. And the media, at the hands of the government, is almost solely submissive to the government control. Only very few media corporations can actually write something that is out of the government scope. But even then, they get subjected to huge tax fines, and they get subjected to violence, they get subjected to threats. and all kinds of other pressure. We have a system called accreditation, which can be seen all around the world. But in Turkey, it is being used for the cause of censorship. Certain media groups are not invited to any event. They are not allowed to write about certain things. And right after the latest explosions in Ankara, there has been declared a broadcast ban. All kinds of media, including social media, is not allowed to talk about the event. This is the deadliest terror attacks in Turkey, no matter where the bombs might have come from. And the government's response is to declare a broadcast ban. There is now a meme going around in Turkish social media that there have been 6 massacres in Turkey, and 6 times there has been a broadcast ban, and no one has resigned, and no one has taken responsibility. So in this sense, one can feel that as a citizen of the country, we are dispensable. There was recently another terrible, shocking video that has been leaked online. A young man being dragged on the streets, a dead body being dragged on the streets. There has started an investigation on this. There has been declared a broadcast ban on the visuals. And the investigation has been started not because someone has been tortured until dead and his dead body was dragged on the streets, but because the videos have been leaked online. So the people who took the video and who leaked it online are being investigated, not the people who have killed and tortured the dead body. The general response towards media and social media is mostly in terms of propaganda and censorship.
You were a participant in the Gezi Park protests and rallies back in 2013. These were rallies that garnered worldwide attention, and they were the subject again of heavy-handed responses on the part of the government. Now, these protests were said to have begun in response to plans to replace an urban park in Istanbul with a shopping mall, but it seems that the protests were over much broader issues than just the park. Tell us about what happened back in 2013, what the climate was like at these protests, and what the response from the government was like.
Well, in the political theory, there is some line that I really love. It's from Josef Ras, a liberal theoretician of political science. He says, if you put too much pressure on the people, if you unnecessarily put pressure on the people, someday will come and they will react to this. They might start reacting regarding the color of the pavement stones even. So that is basically what has happened. The Turkish public space has been surrounded and put under pressure from all sides at all levels. And the last point, the last drop came as cutting down of the trees in a park. So until that moment, there has been minor reactions, but the reactions could not get reunified for some reason. And only then, when the park was to be demolished, only then people have been able to get united for one cause. And I think the main reason for this was that it has been seen as neutral. It didn't have any political affiliation. For the first time in the Turkish history, the citizens have taken up their cause, and they did not expect someone to lead them. I see the Gezi Park protests as the uprising of millions of people who decided to take their own fate into their own hands. And unlike the previous times, this time there were no political leaders to guide people. This time there was no one putting words into people's mouths. The citizens, individuals, have been able to say, this is my spot on earth, and this is what I occupy in my world, and this is where I am going to be, and this is how I am going to live. Because in the prior to the protests, there have been legislations being passed for 2 months regarding alcohol prohibition, regarding men and women in the same house, regarding unmarried couples living together, regarding who is going to do what, where. There was too much intervention to personal lives. And of course, there was to be valid reaction to this. And it was, in fact, it was very expectable. And when combined with the excessive use of force by the police, it has turned into a nuclear event, basically.
This is the Alaris Radio. We will return after a short break. Thank you.
Βαβυλώνα στη χειμερά σου αντί για κόντιο. Κοινά ένας φίλος για ταξίδι υπερπόδιο. Για να κηρύξει την ανθρωπιά την καλοσύνη. Μα του περάσανε χαλκά οι σαρακίνοι. Για το δικό του θεό, του κόσμου το αδικό. Σ' ένα σουλτάνο μπροστά, τον παν καταδικό. Τον λύνει αυτός απ' τα δεσμά του. Κι έτσι ο φίλος μας κοινάει να πει κι αλλού το κήρυγμά του. Σ' ένα πηγάδι σταματάει να ξεδιψάσει. Μα μια γυναίκα δεν αργεί να πλησιάσει. Ωραία στην όψη, μα η καρδιά της δηλητήριο. Με το κορμί της τον καλεί σ' άλλο μαρτύριο. Για το δικό σου Θεό, μαζί σου θα καώ. Της άπλωσε τα χέρια και βγήκαν περιστέρια. Πιστεύει αυτή με το αγγίγμα του. Κι έτσι ο φίλος μας κοινάει να πει κι αλλού το κήρυγμά του.
Frate Francesco partì una volta per oltremare, fino alle terre di Babilonia a predicare. Coi suoi compagni sulla via dei Saracini, furono presi e bastonati poverini. Frate Francesco parlò e bene predicò, che il gran sultano ascoltò e molto lo ammirò. Lo liberò dalle catene, così Francesco partì per Babilonia a predicare.
Το φτωχούλι θα πω δυο λόγια απ' την Ασίζη, που πήγε πέρα στις Βαβυλώνας το μετερίζει. Για να κηρύξει την ανθρωπιά την καλοσύνη. Μα του περάσανε χαλκά οι σαρακίνοι. Για το δικό του Θεό, του κόσμου το αδικό. Σ' ένα σουλτάνο μπροστά, τον παν καταδικό. Τον λύνει αυτός απ' τα δεσμά του. Κι έτσι ο Φραγκίσκος κοινάει να πει κι αλλού το κήρυγμα.
Να το Φραγκίσκο καλό, επίνε πρινικό. Για να σου τα βασκό, θα υπάρχει ο ταμικό.
Το είναι αυτός, απ' τα δεσμά του. Κι έτσι ο Φραγκίσκος κοινάει να πει κι αλλού το κήρυγμα του.
We now return to the Diálogos interview series here on Diálogos Radio. We are speaking with Turkish journalist, academic, and activist Gürkan Özturan here on Diálogos Radio in the Diálogos interview series. And Gürkan, Turkey, of course, under the Erdogan government, has often been portrayed as an economic success story and as a regional economic powerhouse by the media and as a model for the rest of the Middle East region. Does this rhetoric match reality for the ordinary people of Turkey, for their economic freedoms, and for their freedom in their everyday lives?
In fact, Erdogan government has not been completely bad. The first 5-6 years has actually seen economic growth. And due to that economic growth, there is a slightly better competitive market right now. And compared to 90s or 80s or 70s, the market situation is, of course, more risky, but at the same time, it bears more opportunities. And I can say that the citizens being able to take up their own rights in their own hands is partly due to Erdogan's economic and financial policies. Unless the people could feel financially stable for themselves, they wouldn't be able to dare to react to this kind of government. So in order for peaceful progress in the country, there had to be two basic elements: that the personal lives of the people would not be interfered, and economically there would be progress and there wouldn't be any intervention to economy. However, this doesn't seem like that in the past 2 years. Starting with the protests, there has been more and more pressure on the economy. The government intervention into economy has been more, and it has been increasing. And because of that, right now, it doesn't seem to have a very bright future. However, thanks to some of the economic advancements in the past 12, 13 years, the citizens, to some extent, have been able to expand their circle of influence. But of course, whoever is able to sustain an economic level of guarantee for themselves, whenever they feel secure and safe, they would ask for more rights. And that is basically what has happened in Turkey. And unfortunately, the government has failed this test to listen to the citizens' demands.
With that, let's talk about what has been happening with the situation in Syria. How has Turkey and its military been involved in the conflict, and how has Turkey responded to the recent involvement of Russia and its aerial campaign in Syria?
Personally, I cannot actually say much about Syria at this level, as there is not so much information in the media going around about Syria and Russia's involvement, but the people seem to be making fun of the government's approach towards Syria. Previously, it has been fatal, the involvement of Turkey in Syria, the training of the rebel groups, and especially the al-Nusra and other jihadist Islamist groups. This has taken a lot of reaction from the citizens. But when Russia's planes have started going through Turkey to Syria to bomb the rebel grounds, that has caused some kind of sour reaction from Turkey. So Turkish government has recently been announcing that the economic ties might get hurt and longtime friends Turkey and Russia might get cold feet even. But the losing end in this situation would be Turkey, I guess, because Turkey is the one to buy gas and oil from Russia. Turkey is the host country when it comes to Russian tourism, and Turkey is also a net benefiter from the trade in terms of vegetables and fruits to Russia, and also in terms of clothing and textile. There has been a huge market between Turkey and Russia, and if there were to be any kind of cooling down of the economic situation, this would not reflect good on the side of Turkey.
Now, within this conflict and also in general, looking at the situation in Turkey recently, how has the government been reacting toward the Kurdish population and towards the Kurdish issue?
Well, as I was saying earlier, the Suruç bombing, it has been declared that the Islamic State has taken responsibility regarding Suruç. And then the government has declared that they are going to start bombing the Islamic State grounds, and they are going to start operations against the Islamic States. So in the past 4 months, there have been so many bombardments, so many house raids, and thousands of Kurds have been taken into custody. They have been arrested. Even though the Kurds have been the victims of attacks, they have been declared responsible, and Turkey has restarted the low-frequency civil war against PKK, as they put it, as low-frequency armed conflict. However, this is not really low-frequency. It is basically declaring curfews in the Kurdish cities up to 8 days, for example, and the curfews that last for 24 hours in the cities where there is no electricity, water, or food supplies. This is treating own citizens as subjects of siege during a war.
We are on the air with Turkish journalist, academic, and activist Gürkan Özturan here on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. And Gürkan, the conflict in Syria and in other Middle Eastern countries has led to a tremendous wave of refugees who are fleeing the region and traveling in many cases towards Europe. And many of these refugees are traveling through Turkey. How do these refugees manage to get through Turkey and into Greece and other countries? And what is being said or being done about the refugee issue in Turkey?
Well, as part of the UN Charter on Refugees, Turkey has opened borders to Syria. They have accepted anyone coming through. And at some point, there have been some complications regarding the documentation of the people coming in, because in the first place, due to international humanitarian crisis, they did not have enough resources to build up the systems. So a lot of people came into Turkey without any kind of documents or without any kind of mechanisms to put them into a proper housing. There are more than 2 million people in Turkey, and this population has started rising due to people giving birth. The Turkish capacity to take care of refugees, to handle refugee situation, is very limited. The Turkish budget obviously cannot handle this, that there are very few facilities that the refugees can go to, and even then, there are not so many services. There needs to be schools, there needs to be hospitals for the refugees, there needs to be proper basic citizen or resident services to be supplied to these people. And they have originally entered to Turkey through the southeastern border, but currently most of them have started going towards the west. And also, both Greece and Bulgaria have a fence on the Turkish border, so it is becoming very hard for them to pass the border through there. Thus, many of them can be seen taking boats from the Aegean coast of Turkey or the Black Sea coast, which is very dangerous, of course, especially in this season. But the refugees in Turkey, they live, many of them live in miserable conditions, and I can say slavery is even re-emerging now. There are many places that offer food and shelter to Syrian refugees in return for heavy labor. And that is a very worrying situation. But unfortunately, I have to say that the European Union has prevented a more peaceful solution to be brought to this issue, that the European Union has been the one to actually raise this situation up to this level by not sharing the burden with Turkey and Greece and Italy. Many countries at the borders of Europe have to suffer with dealing with so many crisis situations, while the other countries, they can say that they will eventually help the countries by taking a few thousand. But you must have seen in the media that the Polish government, I guess it was, had said that 2,000 refugees would endanger the Polish national culture. Well, in that case, the Turkish national culture with over 2 million people should already have been devastated, but the situation is really worrying.
Well, Gürkan, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today and for sharing your insights with us about these important issues and everything that has been taking place recently in Turkey.
Well, thank you so much. I would like to share with you a couplet from a poem that we have recently translated by Said Faik Abasiyanık. We have recently come together as a group of poets, and we have decided to put this line to give hope to humanity. So I will share it with you. It goes as, beauty will save the world. It will start with loving someone. So hopefully people will find hope by loving someone at some point. Thank you so much.
Thank you once again for joining us. Attention iTunes users, Diálogos Radio is now just a click away. You can now download our podcasts and listen to Diálogos Radio 24/7 anytime, anywhere. Check us out today in the iTunes podcast directory and in iTunes Radio. Thank you.
στεφανάκι σου παλιό. Έπεισε απ' τη θαμπάτα η Σμύρνη με το κορδελιό και η παλιά Ελλάδα. Παλιά Ελλάδα, μου τζουραμένο το γυαλί, μα πίσω απ' τους καπνούς του βλέπει ο Θεός το αϊβαλί και σταματάει ο νους του, και σταματάει ο νους. Ασμύρνε η καταούλια, ποιος σου τα μάθε, μα τα λες και τα δακρύζεις της καρδιάς μαθέ. Ασμύρνε η καταούλια, ποιος σου τα μάθε, μα τα λες και τα δακρύζεις της καρδιάς μαθέ. Σκαπηλιό και βγήκες μεθυσμένο, και βγήκες μεθυσμένο.
Έλα.
Ας μην τα βράδια ποιος σου τα μάθε, να κάνες και να δακρύζεις της καρδιάς μαντέ. Ας μην τα βράδια ποιος σου τα μάθε, λες και να δακρύζεις της καρδιάς μας. Σταματάει ο νους του και σταματάει ο νους του. Ας μυρνε τα τραγούδια ποιος σου τα μάθηνε, να τα λες και να τα κρύζεις της καρδιάς μαντέ. Ας μυρνε τα τραγούδια ποιος σου τα μάθηνε, να τα λες και να τα κρύζεις.
Ευχαριστούμε πολύ. Καλησπέρα.
Take the Dialogos Radio on the go with you with the new Dialogos Radio app for Android devices. Now you can listen live to the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos Radio 24/7, download our podcasts, and read our latest articles all in our free Android app, available now in the Google Play Store. That was Pantelis Thalassinos here on the Alagos Radio with the Smyrnaica Tragudia, and earlier we heard Lavrentis Majeritzas with a song titled Ο Σουλτάνος της Βαβυλώνας και η Γυναίκα. We just wrapped up this week's edition of the Alagos interview series here on the Alagos Radio, where we spoke with Turkish journalist, blogger, academic, and activist Gürkan Özturan, and this interview will soon be available as a podcast on our website, thealagosmedia.org, in the Alagos Radio Android, Kindle, BlackBerry, and Chrome apps, in iTunes, TuneIn.com, the Windows Store, and in the Nobex Radio, WeCast, Player FM, and Stitcher apps. Coming up next here on the Alagos Radio is our commentary of the week. The Alagos Radio's commentary of the week. Each week, Michael Navradakis provides views and opinions on issues pertaining to Greece and to the worldwide Greek community. Coming up next, here on the Alagos Radio. On October 28th, Greeks around the world will commemorate the anniversary of Ochi Day, the day on which in 1940 the Greek government said no to the demands of Mussolini to pass his troops through Greece unimpeded. This no has become an annual commemoration in Greece and is remembered as a moment of great resistance for Greece and its people, despite the fact that it came from a fascist far-right government in its own right. Today, though, the word no has been stripped of its significance in Greece. After the supposed referendum of July 5th, a referendum without a clear question posed to the voters, and despite the 62% that voted no, without a clear message on the part of the voters, as the events since then have shown, we have seen the word no converted to yes, yes, yes. Yes to even harsher austerity measures and cuts than those which were purportedly rejected in a referendum. And in contrast with 1940, there is no longer any semblance of national pride or a national identity in Greece, no backbone to truly stand up to this onslaught. On the night of July 5th, the people of Greece knew how to spill out onto the streets and the squares to celebrate the supposedly heroic, historic vote of no. Celebrations which, in my opinion, were premature, as the government of the so-called first-time left had demonstrated much evidence of its insincerity and willingness to sell out the people. I expressed this opinion in no less than 4 separate articles which were written shortly before and after the referendum and which are still available online. However, I was the bad guy then for saying these things. I was the bad guy because I didn't participate in the celebrations for the no vote. I was the bad guy because I wasn't celebrating the heroic Tsipras, Varoufakis, or Kostandopoulou. I was the bad guy because I was simply saying the raw truth that the Syriza-led government had been staging an elaborate show of supposed resistance and negotiation with the Troika, which it had renamed to the kinder, gentler institutions. Instead of stating a clear and resounding no of its own to the blackmail and the harsh demands of the Troika, and instead of preparing plans to lead Greece out of the European Union and the Eurozone. I was the bad guy because I had seen the first-time left government continuing the austerity measures and agreements of the previous governments, enforcing presidential decrees in order to loot the national treasury and pay the IMF after saying that it would not continue the previous government's practice of ruling by decree. I saw this government elect the corrupt conservative former government minister Prokopis Pavlopoulos as president of the republic, and I saw it telling the people of Greece that it was their patriotic duty to pay the unified property tax, which prior to the January election Syriza had deemed unconstitutional and promised that the tax would be abolished. And, just so I can be even more of a bad guy, I will remind you that the members of the breakaway party Popular Unity, Laiki Enotita, voted yes to almost all of the aforementioned measures, while now presenting themselves to gullible voters as some sort of radical anti-austerity alternative. And just what can we expect now from the government which was once championing no, now that it has passed a new comprehensive bill containing dozens of new austerity measures demanded by the Troika? I'll become even more of a bad guy by telling you. Elimination of the minimum pension, continuation of the illegal unified property tax, an increased interest rate for those paying for the tax in 100 installments, an increase in the price of tickets and public transportation, abolition of tax exemptions for farmers, the legislative abolishment of Greece's pharmaceutical industry, a mandatory tax of 100 euros per month on all freelancers whether or not they had an income, and foreclosure of a household's primary residence via electronic means are just some of the many measures included in the new law voted by the members of the now second-time left government of the charismatic Alexis Tsipras and the patriotic Panos Kamenos. Ah, but if you're a Greek homeowner in danger of losing your primary residence, don't worry. As stated by the government, foreclosures will only take place against those households which are, quote, uncooperative with the banks. Indeed, this same government, which prior to the January elections had promised that it would curtail the power of the oligarchs in Greece, is now preparing to issue licenses to only 4 national broadcasters, fewer than exist today, and to auction off these licenses to the highest bidder, ensuring that only the deepest, most oligarchical pockets will be able to afford them. The government is also preparing to do the same to the radio landscape, which means that if our listeners in Greece can no longer hear us in a few months, this will likely be the reason. The second time left government of hope and change is claiming that by enforcing this bitter medicine, that the country will once again be close to returning to economic growth, growth which has been promised each and every year since 2011, but which somehow still remains elusive. This is why, apparently, Greece must now sell off 14 profitable, publicly owned regional airports, all in the name of supposed economic growth. This is why a mainstay in a Greek urban landscape, the kiosk, has been legislatively abolished, because apparently it was these kiosks that sell ice cream and bottled water that were the impediment to economic growth in Greece and the attaining of the so-called European prospect or dream. A European dream which will allow the Greek people to efficiently travel from German-owned airports and Chinese-owned harbors at the same time that such infrastructure remains largely publicly owned in countries like Germany and the United States, along with water systems, power companies, and highways. The European dream, which will allow the Greek people to buy their cigarettes and chocolate bars the civilized European way from multinational supermarkets instead of the corner kiosk. And in the meantime, the second time left government boasts members of parliament such as Evi Karakosta, who voted yes, yes, yes to the sell-off of Greece's biggest harbors, and then brazenly took part in public demonstrations against the sell-off of the harbors, proving that schizophrenia is a prevalent trait among politicians today, as also seen by the placement of the absolutely corrupt former leader of PASOK Evangelos Turkoglu as secretary of the Greek Parliamentary Commission on Transparency, as also seen by the removal from the Greek Parliament's website of any mention of the involvement of the new Speaker of the Parliament, Nikos Voutsis, in the Parliamentary Debt Audit Commission or in a commission which was investigating the Siemens scandal, and as also seen by the recent statements by Economy Minister Yorgos Tathakis, where he claimed to have simply forgotten to declare 1 million euros in income on his 2012 tax return. And now, we have the European Commissioner for Economic and Financial Affairs, Pierre Moscovici, shaking a big stick at Greece and saying that there can be no discussion about debt relief, on the same debt, I remind you, which has been determined to be illegal and odious, until Greece follows through with its so-called reforms, referencing the staged, corrupt, and completely discredited public opinion polls from Greece, which claim that 80% of the Greek people wish to remain in the Eurozone at all costs, polls which are now being used as a weapon by the European Union against Greece. Then we have Nobel Peace Prize nominee Angela Merkel, who from the golden throne she was sitting on during her recent visit to the Sultan Erdogan in the Neo-Ottoman Empire of Turkey, proposed that Greece and Turkey run joint patrols in the Aegean Sea to go after the Syrian refugees. This is the same Merkel that is housing such refugees in former concentration camps in Germany. If you have ever taken a moment to wonder why the public sector in Greece is so inept, why Greece's universities are rotting away, why so many public works projects are rusting away, why Greece's TV stations have not been licensed at any point in the past 25 years, why Greece's agricultural production has been decimated, why schools in Greece enforce rote learning, and why students are forced to learn 2 foreign languages when in many other European countries this is not a requirement at all, why Greece's injustice system operates in a way that it does, and why the Greek state consistently seems to create obstacles for any new or innovative business idea, the reasons are the very same as the reasons why the government, at the behest of the Troika, is now getting ready to destroy Greece's pharmaceutical industry, shutter the kiosks, and sell off airports, harbors, and water and electric systems. The reason is that this is exactly what the powers that be, the US, Germany, the UK, France, and others, want. A country in a geostrategic location that is essentially a neo-colony, forever mired in mediocrity with no voice of its own, and whose promising young and educated workforce will simply migrate and benefit the economies of the economic superpowers instead of Greece, while foreign multinationals come in and dominate the Greek market, leaving no room for domestic industry or production. In the meantime, Iceland has sentenced 26 separate bankers to jail sentences, totaling 74 years. It's too bad Iceland has rejected the European dream in such a way. What a shame. This is why, as the October 28th commemoration approaches, I will state my own no. No to the corrupt, traitorous, pro-austerity parties of Syriza, the independent Greeks, Basok, New Democracy, Potami, and others, and to the voters of these atrocities. No to corruption and patronage. No to the injustice system of Greece. No to Greece's completely corrupt, oligarch-owned media, and to the absolutely pathetic, talentless hacks who serve as foreign correspondents and freelancers based in Greece. And no to the Euro, the European Union, and the never-ending pro-European, self-loathing, and national inferiority complex of Greece. TheAlogosMedia.org, our website which brings you the latest news from The Alagos Radio, live streaming of The Alagos Radio 24/7, podcasts, on-demand programming, and much more. Visit us today at TheAlogosMedia.org. We just wrapped up our commentary of the week, and coming up is some more great Greek music here on The Alagos Radio.
Χρόνια καρδιά μου και στα ζώα. στα αιώνια δεν τα χάλασα. Τρίπια παντελόνια πάμε γυάλασαν σαν μικρά παιδιά. Ναι θα πω αφού το ξέρω πάλι, ναι θα πω και με μονό σανδάλι. Θα τραπώ να πω φοβάμαι τη ζωή.
Follow Dialogos Radio on Facebook and Twitter and remain connected to all our latest news and updates. Check us out today at facebook.com/dialogosmedia and at twitter.com/dialogosmedia. That was Melina Aslanidou with Ne Tha Po here on Dialogos Radio, where today's program is just about ready to come to a close. We will be back in a couple of weeks, though, with an interview with Panayotis Economidis of the Choris Mesazondes, or No Middleman Movement in Greece, who will speak to us about how this movement is attempting to combat high food costs and to provide inexpensive, locally produced, nutritious food to Greek households who are struggling during the economic crisis. Economidis will talk about the movement, about the social economy in Greece, as well as the challenges that it has faced from government authorities in Greece. That is coming up on the next broadcast of Dialogos Radio, and until then, be sure to check out our most recent published work, including our interview with Professor Deborah Berman Santana, who spoke to us about the economic crisis in Puerto Rico and its many similarities with the Greek crisis. This interview was published in English on Truthout and in a Greek translation on freepan.gr, and you can find the links to these interviews on our website, dialogosmedia.org, as well as a link to a recent feature on Dialogos Radio, published in English by GreekTV.com. All this, plus our podcasts, our archived on-demand programming, and our online radio station, Dialogos Radio 24/7, can be found on dialogosmedia.org. We will close out today's broadcast with Kostas Makedonas singing Το Ποδήλατο. For Dialogos Radio, this is Michael Nevradakis. Thanks for joining us.
Παίρνω ένα ποδήλατο και φεύγω για τα δύνατο. Κρατάω στο χέρι το κλειδί. Πιάνω το τιμόνι, ο σφιγμός μου δυναμώνει. Το έργο κάπου το έχω ξαναδεί. Ήμουν μικρό παιδάκι με καθαρή καρδιά. Είχα το όνειρό μου, το ποδήλατό μου κι όλα έμοιαζαν σωστά. Έγινα 16 κι όλα ήταν εντάξει, είχα μια ζωή μπροστά. Ποδήλατό μου ήταν πάντοτε δικό μου και με πήγαινε πολύ μακριά. Μέσα στη Σαχάρα σαν την πιο βαθιά λαχτά.